Welcome to Sportsmen of Colorado, Colorado's premier outdoor radio show, heard every Saturday afternoon on KLZ 560 with insights on hunting, fishing, archery, guns, and ammo from Colorado's top outfitters, featuring the industry's leading experts on how to enhance your experience in the great outdoors. Now, here's your host, Scott Whatley.
Welcome to Sportsman of Colorado. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Scott Whatley. Be sure and check out our new website. It's Sportsman, and that's M-A-N, sportsmanofcolorado.com. And a few things there you'll notice. We've got some new banner ads there from our sponsors. Those will be direct links to their website. And every few weeks, we're going to feature one of our sponsors. You notice there's one now for Yes Bay Lodge, which we were able to go to and visit in Alaska this last July. And you will see a great deal there. Now, that package that they've got on our front page of our website for the $28.95, that's going to be their show special this year at the International Sportsman's Expo. And so we've got a few of those that they're letting us do for that price as well. We're also going to be getting Lone Star Hunts, our hog hunting partner, Alan Schaffner, down in Wichita Falls, Texas. We're going to be doing some things with them real soon as well. Well, this is second rifle season opening day, and we had to pre-tape today's show because I am involved in that. We are going to be down over in Meeker, Colorado, and hunting with our good friend Quentin Smith and QRS Outdoor Specialties. But looking back over the last few weeks of our shows and podcasts, and one of our most popular podcasts has been our show we did recently with Chris Rowe from Rowe Resources. And Chris does a lot of great talks around. He does several seminars at the International Sportsman's Expo. We'll be doing that again this year. But Chris is very, very knowledgeable on everything in the outdoors, really, with just animal behavior, the rut, all kinds of things. Chris is a great hunter, great outdoorsman, and really just has a great way of really explaining this whole hunting process. So, because of that being one of our most popular podcasts, we are going to be playing an encore presentation of that today. So throughout the day, this is going to be Chris Rowe from Rowe Resources. Welcome to Sportsman of Colorado. My name is Scott Whatley. Thank you so much for joining us, along with my partner, Red Merrill. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing good, Scott, and it's good to be here.
Great to be here. And got a great show for you today. A good friend of ours, met really probably 3 years ago or so at the International Sportsman's Expo, and Chris Rowe does a lot of seminars for us at the ISE, and we'll be there again this year in January, and we'll give you those dates a little bit later in the show for this year's International Sportsman's Expo. But Rowe Hunting Resources, and check out Chris's website at rowehuntingresources.com. Chris, welcome.
How you doing, my friend?
Great to see you again.
Good seeing you. And thanks for having me.
In some ways, it seems like, boy, January's been a long time ago, you know, but yeah. In other ways, it seems like it was just a 2 months ago.
And
it,
I think the older we get, the faster things go, and that I'm the same way. I'm looking at my watch right now going, how in the world is it July?
I know, absolutely.
Towards the end of July.
Right, right, absolutely. Now, Red, he would know about that as you get older, not you and I.
I do know about that. Yeah. In fact, time flies now.
Well, I was kind of thinking you might be starting to forget stuff already. But
that's been for several years.
He's been practicing that for a while. But, Chris, let's start out. And, again, boy, appreciate you coming in today. And we're going to do the whole show with Chris because I really was fortunate to get him in town and have him in studio. And let's talk just a little bit about your background and really how you got into this whole outdoor world.
Sure. Well, I grew up hunting and fishing like a lot of people did, but I was always, for some reason, just fascinated by animal behavior, communication, and calling, really. I started turkey hunting and deer hunting, and I just really loved calling animals. So my grandfather was a game warden, retired from New York State Department of DEC, and he really got me into hunting and fishing at an early age, but I always liked that idea of working with wildlife. So long story short, I went to college to become a wildlife biologist. Took a break, did a stint in the military for a little while, but then I decided, no, I want to get back into it. So I finished my career, my college career, if you will, here in Colorado, you know, studying wildlife. But I was fortunate to get one of my first jobs working with wildlife, doing a lot of research that was behavioral research related with elk. And it was over at that point. I mean, it just was fascinating. And so my job was literally to hike up the mountain each summer, follow elk around, record and observe behavioral interactions. And so that's really where everything started for me. And I just, since then, it's just, that's what I do. That's what I love. That's my passion. So I'm a wildlife biologist with a strong background in behavioral ecology.
Wow.
Yes, that's good. Pretty good. And not only that, I was talking to him earlier, but he's somewhat of a cowboy. He's got horses, and he uses horses to ride in to get way beyond people, and then use those horses to pack game out, which is really interests me because I've done that several times.
Yeah,
I just wasn't successful in killing anything.
You got the horses back there. You just didn't have any need for them, right?
I didn't need to pack them out.
Exactly. Now, we mentioned Roe Hunting Resources. How did that come about?
Well, I was also, through the years, I've been fortunate enough to get put on a couple of pro staffs. And so sometimes what pro staffs you do, you get out there and you do seminars. Well, as a kid, I used to attend seminars. I used to go and listen to people, and I always sat there and thought, you know, I talk about the so what factor. If I'm going to sit here and give you an hour of my time, what am I learning? What are you giving me? I don't care about listening to your stories. What am I going to take away from it? So that so what factor. So when all of a sudden I'm faced with I'm now the one up there talking and giving the seminars, I was scared. I just like, I need to give these people something of meat and potatoes, something worthwhile. And so it very quickly dawned on me as I started talking about some of the behavioral stuff, you know, body language, communication, vocalizations, and that type of stuff. And from a science background, you just watch the people's faces, their eyes lit up, they sat forward in their chairs, and they're like, I really want to know about this. And so fast forward after, probably 10 years, I finally said, and this is about the time when the internet really started to become more user-friendly, where you could do stuff on, you know, video streaming and sharing information on the internet. We finally said, you know what? All of the stuff that I had done for the previous 10, 15 years on, you know, clinics and seminars and summer camps and all that type of stuff, we can put that material now in a platform online. We have a website. We started it in 2010, launched everything as a subscription-based service in 2011 to where people can come on, they can log in, and they can now for the elk module, we have over 20 hours of just in-depth, science-based educational materials that they can come in and learn. But more importantly, it's not just me flapping my gums, me telling you something. So what? I can tell you whatever I want you to know. For us, I record, I video elk, I show you the elk doing it, so we talk about it, but now here's an elk doing what we just talked about. Watch the body language, watch the ear position, watch what she does or watch what he does. Who does he respond to? Who does he not respond to? What is that cow doing? Did the bull respond to that cow? You get to see the elk doing it, not just me flapping my gums, but you get to watch the elk interact, and then we pick it apart so people have a deeper understanding of what's going on and why.
Wow. Because that's really true, Red. I mean, if you don't have the time to really get into it, first of all, we could probably never do that 20 hours of the rest of our life of what you get to watch there, you know. So to get that, and the more and more you meet people that are just getting into hunting, man, what a great resource to have. Roe Hunting Resources. And check out that website, roehuntingresources.com. Now, last year you were here, so I'm just going to ask you and put you on the spot. You gave us a 20% off for subscription with the promo code RADIO. I don't know if we need to change that again, but
we can absolutely set that up again. So, no, absolutely.
Okay. All right. So you can go to roehuntingresources.com, do 20% off of the subscription for you. The promo code, just type in RADIO.
Yep.
Now, you talked about calling. Man. It's great when you get to watch experienced guys and they know what they're doing, but you pick up the same thing you just bought at a show and get home, and it usually doesn't sound like what you did at a show. What tips do you have just for calling? And, you know, what do you like as far as calls, cow calls, the bugles, whatever? What do you like? And how do you go about learning?
Number one, play. If you're just starting out, you need to play with a bunch of different types because, And I do in the website, we go through all the different types of calls that are out there and kind of help you pick which one's right for you. If I was just going to start off right on the surface, anything that you use with your hands is going to be very, very easy for you to pick up and learn. However, there's going to be some limitations to what you can do with those. So like the Primos Hoochie Mama or the Carlton Squeeze Me or whatever. Those are very, very easy calls for a beginner, but they're going to be very limited on what you can achieve with them. Say, but it's not a bad call to start with. If you want a mouth-blown call that was going to give you a lot of more versatility, I would suggest people start with an open reed style cow call. It's got the it has an exposed reed. You put it and you squeeze it with your lips and you blow. There's a variety of different types of those calls with fat reeds, skinny reeds, long reeds, short reeds. Okay, I really like. There's two that I like a lot. It's Bugling Bull Game Call sells them, or SteveChappell.com. It's the Trophy Wife and the Matriarch. Both of those are just absolutely easy to blow. They don't stick. I mean, they are probably the easiest and most versatile you can choose. Now, if you want to step up from there, everybody talks about a mouth diaphragm call, right? And if you are very good at picking up things and learning them and mastering them, mouth diaphragms, don't feel intimidated by them. But they can be tricky because every call has to fit your mouth right. The fit for a mouth diaphragm is key. Not, you know, beyond anything else, it has to fit right. Just like your shoes, we might both wear a size 11, right, but you prefer a different shoe than I do because our feet are different. The same thing goes with mouth call. So pick up a variety of different types of calls. And then number two, just play with them. Don't worry about getting an elk sound out right away. Just play with them to where you can understand, how do I need to make sound? How can I control the sound? Once you get comfortable making sound and being able to control the sound, well, now it just comes down to just listening to elk sounds and then mimicking them and reproducing them. And again, if you understand what you're saying, makes it a little bit easier as far as success on getting an effect of it. But to just learn and master those calls, play with it, get sound out, then start listening to elk and other callers and reproducing it from there.
Yeah, you know, Chris, we had a guy on that was a duck caller, John Cibarol, and he was extremely good. And he said that, all these calls are like a musical instrument.
Yes.
And you have to practice.
Yes.
Just like you would, a musical instrument, to learn how to play it good.
Yep, I agree with that wholeheartedly. Now, some are going to be a little trickier to learn than others, but that's where everybody's individual ability is going to be different. You know, there's some people, from that analogy of a musical instrument, when we're talking about reproducing sounds, everybody's musical ear, if you will, there's some people that have a very keen ability to mimic sounds hyper accurately. I'm blessed to be one of those people, but there's other people that just don't have quite a musical ear, and so it takes them practice to really master what they are doing. It takes practice. So yeah, play with those, get a variety of different types, play with them, get comfortable with them, and then move into trying to make cow or bull sounds or whatever you want to do. I think sometimes people try to jump in and say, I'm going to do a really good bugle. It doesn't come out right. They get frustrated, so they put the call away, or they don't call. They never started at the basics and worked their way into it. So, yeah, I agree with that analogy wholeheartedly.
Right. Our guest today is Chris Rowe, Rowe Hunting Resources. Check out the website, rowehuntingresources.com. Again, Chris has been kind enough to offer 20% off his subscription. Just type in on the promo code RADIO. You know, now, sometimes we've been out, last few years, we've hunted with a good friend of ours, Quentin Smith, QRS Outdoor Specialties. We've had a guide with us. And, Brady, our guy, he'll go, all right, I'm going to call back here like a young bull or an aggressive bull. How do you know when to do that, how to do that? And one time, he came back real aggressive. It blew the bull out, and he was 50 yards from us. We hadn't seen him yet, yeah. But he blew, and he goes, shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
I guess that's the way you learn.
Well, absolutely. And, quite honestly, with that being said, I just got off the phone talking with people, and on our forum on the website, people are like, well, I'm so nervous about making a mistake. I don't want to screw up. Well, that's how you learn. I mean, I can teach you. You can get on our website, and you can learn everything that you'll ever want to learn, and you can master it. Right up until the point you've got to put your boots on the ground and you've got to put it in play. And the only way to really, master some of that, you've got to be out there and you've got to be willing to make mistakes. Now, you don't have to be stupid about things, but be willing to make some mistakes. So in that case, yeah, there's a lot of times where, people say, well, I'm going to sound like a small bull, or I'm going to sound like a big bull. A lot of times it comes down to taking that animal's temperature, trying to figure out what disposition that animal has. And I talk all the time that there's lovers and fighters. There's some bulls out there, or some elk, and it doesn't even matter if it's cows or bulls, but there's some elk out there that are, they want to engage other individuals. They are very gregarious. They want to be with them. And then there's other ones that want nothing to do with anybody. There are some bulls that are very, very timid. And then there are some bulls that are very, very aggressive. Sometimes if you listen to them out in the wild, if they are vocalizing themselves, there are a bunch of different behavioral and vocal cues that you can pick up on to give you an indication of what you're hearing and what maybe that animal is doing. So for me, my philosophy has always been, I start off very low key, very passive, and then I will build up from there only if I need to. I will go as aggressive or, you know, more targeted or whatever. I will only go as far as I need to get the response and the reaction that I need. Just like you said, sometimes you can get a little too aggressive too quickly, especially here in Colorado. We've got a lot of bulls, because of sex ratio and age class structures, they don't want to deal with other bulls. They've got their four cows or five cows. They might be bugling. They might be out there broadcasting. They might want more cows. But all of a sudden, another bull gets in their back pocket, and they're like, nope, I'm out. I don't want to deal with him. And so they move away. So, yes, aggressive tactics can work very, very well sometimes. My philosophy has always been, I start low, build up only if and when I need to. Because bottom line, my goal, I want to put an elk on the ground. I want to fill my freezer. I want to go after that animal, and I want to fill my tag.
Sure.
I don't necessarily have to have a specific experience out there. If I can call two or three times and that bull walks in range dead quiet, I'm just happy about that. I'll put him on the ground just as fast as a bull comes in screaming. So.
No kidding. You're listening to Sportsman of Colorado. Glad to have Chris Rowe in studio with us. We got to take a short break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
In a flash, from out of nowhere, your whole life can change forever. It happened so quickly, nobody saw it coming. Soon, the medical bills will be arriving.
Will insurance cover your injuries? Does the other driver have assets? Should I sue?
It was his fault, after all. After an accident, you need to call the law offices of Flesh Law. Flesh Law will never settle until you are fully compensated for your injuries.
Call 303-806-8886 for the Flesh Law Firm. 303-806-8886. Online, go to fleshlawfirm.com.
Flesh Law, the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys.
This is Red Merrill for Phoenix Weaponry. Phoenix Weaponry is a weapon manufacturer that services the firearm enthusiast. From precision ARs to suppressors, Phoenix Weaponry can make your dreams come true. Phoenix Weaponry is a full-service gun shop that offers gunsmithing, coating, and modifications to your own weapon. Phoenix Weaponry, family-owned and operated right here in Colorado. If you can dream it, Phoenix Weaponry can build it. Call today, 720-340-2496. Again, that's 720-340-2496. Or visit their website, phoenixweaponry.com. Mention Sportsman of Colorado and receive 10% off your custom-built weapon.
Integrity, experience, respect. These are the values that Molly Jansen will bring to the Office of District Attorney. As a mother of three, Molly understands that as District Attorney, her first responsibility is to carry out justice consistently and fairly. Molly's 13 years in private practice have given her the experience to not just win trials, but to manage teams effectively and budget wisely. Molly Jansen, the right choice for District Attorney.
I'm Molly Jansen, and I approve this message.
It's truck month again at Lynn Lyle Chevrolet. We're the number one truck dealer in Colorado. Hi, I'm Dan Johnson. We're overstocked with trucks and giving discounts and rebates up to $10,000 off Silverados. Hurry, these offers won't last. LynnLyleChevrolet.com. Chevy, find new roads.
Dana Lash, late nights at 10 on KLZ 560 and 100.7 FM. KLZ, the source.
Welcome back to Sportsman of Colorado. If you're just joining us, turning on your radio, my name is Scott Watley, along with my partner, Red Merrill. We got Chris Rowe in studio. Rowe Hunting Resources. Check out his website, rowhuntingresources.com. And once again, Chris is offering 20% off his subscriptions, promo code RADIO. Be sure and check that out. Now, Chris, last year, I believe it was, you gave us, or it could have been the year before at the ISC here in Denver, you gave a seminar on rethinking the rut.
Yes.
So let's talk about that a little bit and just some of the things you go over there.
Well, the whole premise behind that discussion was, especially here in Colorado, there's a lot of people, and that really focuses around the seasons that we have in September and early October. So we're talking about archery, muzzleloader, and essentially that first limited rifle season. You can get into the middle part, you know, the first general rifle season and touch on some of that. But really the focus of that seminar was for the bow hunters and muzzleloader hunters and those people that want to go out that first limited rifle season early October. And the reason why that conversation came up is because the state was going through their five-year big game season structure, and there were some hunters that say, we want to change, bow hunters wanted to change the season structures to where it started on September 1st and went to the end of September. A lot of people may, or I don't know if they may or may not know, currently season structure for archery starts the last weekend of August and then typically ends the last weekend, full weekend of September. So there are some that said, I want to be able to hunt that full last week of September because I want to hunt, quote unquote, the rut. Their idea being that the later on in September we are, the better the rut is, and that's when the quote unquote rut happens. Well, and the point by that, and the reason why they want that is, the more breeding frenzy that's going on in the woods, the sloppier and more careless a lot of times bulls get, or even cows get, and so it gives us a tiny bit of an advantage to try to either locate animals or successfully capitalize on them, call them in, and be able to harvest them. Well, the problem with that is there are a number of biological factors that affect when it, you know, and if we're talking about the rut, I think sometimes we're talking about apples and oranges. There are some people that talk about the rut based on what they see as far as animal behavior and bugling and that type of deal, so the manifestation of what they see, versus those people that are talking about actual breeding, all right? And those two are not always the same, all right? So to try to clarify and consolidate the conversation and then try to share some other information, that's why I did that seminar. And that seminar is in the elk module on the website, and it's an 8 or 9 part series that helps it break it down to where we go in a little bit more detail, but also kind of, you know, like here, we put in a little tiny sound bite so it's a little easier to chew on. At the ISC, I think it was an hour long discussion. Right. Well, here's the thing. There are a number of factors biologically, physiologically, that can actually affect a cow to come into heat and breed early than there are factors that will push her back and have her breed late. How many times have you been out in the field or at the sports shows or whatever and heard people talk about, oh, you know, man, we just had a terrible elk season there. Oh, it was a late rut. It was a late rut. Well, the problem is for most of us that work for a living, we have maybe a 4-day weekend or maybe we take a week off, you know, and that's our elk hunt. We plan our vacation and we take a 1 week off vacation. Well, in some cases, the people that did not hear a lot of bugling, did not see a lot of activity, a lot of times that our nature is, well, it's a late rut, so it happened later. I didn't see it. I missed it, or it didn't happen yet. I will argue in some of our herds, I think we actually may have, people may have actually missed the bulk of breeding because it happened early. And you can hear that repeatedly. More and more people in Colorado are finding more and more success that first and second week of season, more bugling, more activity, more responsive to calling, et cetera, than they are that last week of September and even in the first part of October. So that's what that talk was about, is picking apart some of those factors that affect that and how we can identify. If you're scouting, how can you start to kind of maybe identify some of these factors and just put a little tickle in your ear saying, maybe rather than that last week of season, maybe I should go third week, or maybe I should go second week in this spot. Not all areas are created equal. So
let me ask you, Chris, what is the normal, if there is such a thing, the average time when the rut starts?
Well, generally speaking, the general accepted, and you can backtrack this off of, you know, from when cows start dropping their calves. If you look at the fall equinox, generally speaking, that's when you, if you look at breeding, let's go back to our high school physics and college physics, the bell-shaped curve of, you know, when in math, when things happen. If you look at the bell-shaped curve, a lot of things happen around, once that fall equinox hits, usually around that September 19th through 21st, 22nd, somewhere in that time frame, that's when you're really going to start ramping things up. So that's why people say, okay, well, it starts the equinox and then it goes for those next couple weeks. Well, that might be the hump, the big bulk of where generally elk, quote unquote, in general do, but that does not mean for where you are in your particular drainage or your ridge or your herd or wherever, that that is what's going on in your particular area.
Does the size of our state, like whether you're hunting up north close to Wyoming or down south close to New Mexico, does that have a difference on when the rut may start?
I absolutely believe it does, but I don't think it has to do with anything about latitude. I think it's because our state is so diverse that we have completely different weather patterns, we have completely different habitats, we have completely different herd dynamics. All those things, I think, absolutely do shift it. And from year to year, I don't think they're the same. So, say, for instance, we're talking about north central Colorado. You've got the White River National Forest, you've got the route and all that stuff. One of the largest herds, well, the White River National Herd is the largest elk herd in the United States. But you look at the terrain differences in that region. You look at the habitat differences, and then you look at some of the herd dynamics. Even in that general area, it's not the same. And so maybe one year, like the winter of 2011 into 2012, we had what was like 300% snowpack. We had the mountains didn't even clear out until August. Okay, you've got a completely different weather pattern, which is going to change forage. It's going to change survivability of calves. It's going to change body condition of cows. I mean, it's going to affect those animals completely different than if we go down to Durango, where at the same time, they were in a quote-unquote normal cycle or maybe a little dry. So it's completely different. And the herd dynamics down there are completely different. We go down to south central Colorado in that Trinidad area and all that, where, again, here's the second largest elk population in Colorado. But we've got a lot of private land mixed in there. Okay, now that changes the herd dynamics, and we've got completely different habitat structure, so, and different weather patterns. I was just the other week, I posted on my Instagram where I was scouting. It was bone dry, and literally we hiked to the top of the mountain to check things out and realized we ran out of water. There was no water anywhere up high. It was all down on the valley floor, so we literally had to turn around, come all the way back, and water was limiting to where that focused us. Well, when I texted that, or I shared that, a buddy of mine was like, what the heck are you talking about? Where are you? He goes, we're getting rained out every day. Well, he's in north central Colorado. Mm-hmm. Completely different weather pattern. Guess what? It's going to affect how the elk, especially later on, how the cows are going to cycle into their estrus pattern.
Okay, then, Chris, what do you think, because of that difference all around the state, what do you think are the key elements that a hunter who really wants to kill a nice bull needs to take into consideration in order to try and time that rut?
All right. Two things. One, what is the weather pattern doing? Is it a dry year or is it a wet year? Okay. Or even, is it a dry year or is it an average or wet year? Okay. Is it dry or not? Number one. And then number two, if you can get out and scout, lay eyes on the animals that you're going after. You don't have to sit there and watch hundreds of them, but just start getting out there and try to lay eyes as much on the cows and calves as you can, as well as the bulls. And where are they? Because three things out of that, just those, they're right there. Number one, if it's a dry year. If a cow, if forage quality is low because of a drought, and the cows cannot pack on enough body condition, body fat, all right? Physiologically, they need to have a certain level of body condition. So if they don't have a certain level of body fat, that can delay when they come into estrus, number one. The other two factors is, what is the cow-calf ratio? Now, this is where you're going to need to be, you're going to have information over several years. But if all of a sudden you get up there and you know that your population normally has 60% calves, so you got 100 cows and 60 calves running around there, and all of a sudden you show up one year and you've got the same 100 cows, but they only have 10 calves, 20 calves, whether it was weather, predation, whatever, somehow they lost their calves. Well, that might actually pull those cows into estrus early because their body condition has come in or is good and they don't have a calf at their side. Likewise, if you go and you scout your areas and all of a sudden in July you start finding large bull, mature bulls, doesn't have to be a big antler, you start finding mature bulls in with those cows early, the presence of a mature bull in with cows early can actually sink the cow estrus, and it can actually pull them into estrus a little early.
Wow, great information.
Yeah.
You're listening to Sportsman of Colorado. My name is Scott Watley, along with Red Merrill. Chris Rowe is our guest, Rowe Hunting Resources. Check out his website, rowehuntingresources.com. 20% off subscription. Put in the promo code RADIO. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of not having a place to hunt or fish? Or maybe you just don't know where to even start to find your next outdoor adventure? This is Kevin Flesch for Colorado Outdoor Sports. Since 2001, Colorado Outdoor Sports has been providing outdoor opportunities to sportsmen with the benefits that only private land can offer. Colorado Outdoor Sports offers over 40,000 acres of private land. Kids under 16 hunt does and cows for free on club property. Call now, 303-460-0273. That's 303-460-0273. Mention Sportsman of Colorado and receive 50% off the initiation fee. Call now, 303-460-0273, or visit their website. Call now, 303-460-0273, or visit their website, ColoradoOutdoorSports.com.
This is Scott Watley for my friends at Rampart Firearms in Sedalia. This is a great store, family owned and operated. They buy, sell, trade, and consign firearms. You will find a great selection of new and pre-owned handguns, shotguns, and rifles. If you can't find the gun you want, Rampart Firearms will special order your gun at no extra cost. Found a gun on the internet? Rampart Firearms will do one firearm transfer and the background check for only $10 if you mention Sportsman of Colorado. Rampart Firearms, 720-468-0050. That's 720-468-0050. Located at Highway 60. In Santa Fe in Sedalia. Rampart Firearms opens 7 days a week. 720-468-0050.
Rush to Reason with John Rush. Weekday afternoons at 3 on KLZ 560.
Well, now listen, people, let me tell you something. Welcome back to Sportsman of Colorado. Glad to have you with us today, and we are exceptionally glad to have Chris Rowe in studio with us. Chris was in town, so I asked him if he could come in today and be with us and answer some questions for us, talk about his business, really, and what he loves to do. And rowehuntingresources.com is his website. If you're just turning on the radio, once again, Chris has been kind enough to offer us a 20% off his subscription. Promo code to put in on his site is radio, and he will get you fixed up there. We get a lot of questions in the show, a lot of different issues and topics, so didn't have time to really get them all to Chris, but a few we did want to go over today. And so, Red, you got a few of those. Let's get Chris to answer some of these for us.
All right, Chris, and you know, I appreciate your expertise in this. I am not an expert elk hunter. I am an opportunist elk hunter.
There's nothing wrong with that
and,
at all.
You know, it's tough for me now because I've had 70 operations and back problems and all kind of stuff. And fortunately, I got the stem cell stuff in my knees, and I'm doing a whole lot better. I got to where I couldn't walk at all. But I'm not in the kind of condition where I can get out and spot and stalk. You know, they're over on the hill 2 miles away, and for me to get there before the next day even is just about impossible. And so I appreciate all the expertise that you've got and all the time that you put in there. And we've got some good questions here. When you have a bull coming straight at you and he is now in bow range, do you ever stop him before he gets too close in hopes that he will turn and present a shot?
All right. Well, if anybody watches my stuff, one of my little sayings is call him to your toes. I like having him to where the last three elk that I've killed have all been 13, 14 steps. So I appreciate this question. Number one, if you pick your setup correctly, all right. Now for me, I do not try to stop the animal if I don't have to. And most of the time I don't have to. I talk about a principle called the doorway all the time. The doorway principle that I talk about is how do I just like you and I in our house, if our wives or girlfriends or what our kids, what it doesn't matter. If someone is in our house and calls to us and say, I need your help, most of the time we're not going to go out in the garage looking for them. We know where they are in the house, and we're going to get up, we're out of your chair, and we're going to move in their direction. But typically, we don't just walk right straight up to them and stand, you know, within 6 inches of them. Most of the time, if you think about what we do in our house, we will get to the doorway of whatever room that they are in, and we will pause, and we will try to make eye contact. If you think about elk moving across the mountain as their house, which it is, we are in their kitchen, their feeding area, their bedroom, their bedding area. We're walking their hallways, those travel corridors. If you start thinking about the mountain as their house, then you can start to understand that when they respond to our calling and they come in, they are going to get to the first spot, the doorway, where they should be able to see us or see whoever they're responding to calling, right? A lot of times we fall into a trap of we set up first where we think we've got better camouflage, we've got better cover behind us, where we might have better shooting lanes. And we think about ourselves first, and we don't think about where that bull is going to go or that cow is going to go. If people flip that around and start thinking about, okay, that bull's coming from that direction, he's coming into me, where is the first spot that he's most likely going to stop and look? Then get yourself in position from that point. A lot of times, that bull's going to come in, and he's naturally going to stop in that doorway, and you're never going to have to say a peep. Let the bull stop or let the cow stop on their own, completely relaxed. Now you have much, much more opportunity to stand there, time your shot with the way it needs to be, get the angle right, whatever you need, let that bull relax, move across that landscape in a relaxed fashion rather than being on alert. Now, to the point of if the animal is facing you, in that case, you've got two choices. One is controversial, and it's a bigger discussion of whether you take a frontal shot. Now, the frontal shot can be absolutely effective in very specific situations. If the animal's relaxed, he's not looking right at you. If you're ready, if you're very accurate with your equipment, whether it's a muzzleloader or whether it's a bow, the frontal shot can be an absolute deadly shot to take, but it has to be right. So for those people that are not comfortable with taking a frontal shot, at that point, what a lot of times I'll do is I'll just wait. That bull is in the doorway. He's going to pause. He's going to stand there and look. And as soon as he does not see what he thinks he needs to see, he's going to do one of two things. He's either going to continue on and come in, or he's just going to relax and kind of fade. He's going to, okay, it's not. And so he's just going to naturally turn and walk away. He's going to move around. Now, typically, I'll give you this little tidbit. I talk about see you first, hear you second, smell you third. They want to see you first. That's their physical body language communication is what they rely on heavily. If they can't do that, they want to hear you and communicate vocally. But if those two things fail, then they want to smell you. So as that bull is standing there and he gets a little, I won't say worried. He just kind of gets curious about why he's not seeing what he thinks he should be seeing. A lot of times that's when they're like, all right, well, I'm going to move. I'm going to switch and I'm going to see if I can't smell what's going on. And so a lot of times they will turn and start to swing downwind. If you're set up to where you can make sure you can cover that downwind side, a lot of times that bull is going to turn on his own and give you a good shot. Or even if he continues to come in, or if he wants to turn and just flat walk away, he's moving now and he's turning and he's shifting his body position to where you probably can get a shot. Now, if he continues to come right on in and he's about to step on you, and yeah, you go to pull your bow back, sure, he may freak out and react, but a lot of times behaviorally, if they don't know what happened, they'll spook, they'll run 5, 6, 10, whatever steps, they'll run off a little bit and they will button hook and turn and they'll look back to try to verify whatever it was they just saw. And if you're ready and if you pull back at that time, as they trot off and turn and stop naturally, again, you don't have to stop them. Let them stop, let them turn, and then you can drill them at that point.
Right. Now, you mentioned wind, and that will kill you hunting if they smell.
Oh, yeah.
They'll blow up usually. First of all, are you like a lot of there's so many no-scent products out there now and all the different things. Any particular ones you like or you think work well?
I do, and some people might call me biased. I used to work with Primos quite a bit, but I will say the Primos Silver XP, what it used to be called Silver XP, it's called Control Freak now. I have tested that stuff extensively, and I will tell you, I think it absolutely is the best out there. There's another product called Dead Down Wind. It is very, very good. Yes, I will use those products to the greatest extent that I can if I'm hunting out of my camper or from the truck or whatever. If I'm going to be on my backcountry hunts, I'll tell you right now, there's very little you can do. Number one, start taking chlorophyll tablets about 2 weeks before season. Chlorophyll tablets, and you can admit just any GNC or vitamin cottage type deal, they are oftentimes prescribed for people that have chronic body odor. It will help clean your body odor out from the inside. So if you take, I take about 200 milligrams every day, about 2 weeks prior to season, and I'll take it right on through season. So that will knock your body odor down. At least pack in maybe a little bar of some soap that you can take a pit bath or whatever that can help knock your pit odor down. And then number three, wear merino wool. If you can afford it, get yourself some merino wool base layers. Whatever is going to be next to your skin, merino wool by far, hands down, is the best thing that you can do to keep your scent minimized while you're in the backcountry.
Wow, great information.
Let me ask you a question. It's not on our list here, but how does the migration of the bull within or elk in general within their territory, how does that work? And like, you know, I've talked to guys that have said, you know, there weren't any elk in my area this time, and last year they were in here by the dozens. And how does that migration pattern affect that?
Well, you've got two things in play, I think, in my opinion on that factor. Number one, when they say they were in here last year but they're not in here this year, my guess is that's habitat dependent. I would bet strong money that they were in here, quote-unquote, last year because there was good forage quality and good moisture, and they're, quote-unquote, not in here this year, I'll bet you, because the forage quality in that particular spot is just not as good as what is maybe over the ridge, in the next valley, or wherever. Elk will go where the best food is, and they know how to find it. And so that's the thing with here in Colorado, we deal with monsoon rainstorm moisture. So we can get a rainstorm over on this end of the mountain that dumps 3 inches of rain every single day versus the other end of the mountain doesn't get a drop. Guess where the elk are going to go? They're going to move to where that forage quality is best, number one. Number two, as far as the migration and movement, and that's where habitat kind of comes in. There are some migration patterns that are very, very long and very pronounced. Northern Colorado is one of them. Other areas, you can get around Rampart Range and some of the lower elevation areas where you got ponderosa pines and stuff, where the elk are really using the same general areas year in and year out, day in, day out. All right, so depends on where you are at. But when we're talking about those large movements, a lot of times what you're talking about is elk moving up an elevation and then coming down later on for the winter. In those situations, oftentimes you're going to have cow-calf groups and young bulls, immature bulls, all grouped up and moving together. And then a lot of times you'll have those mature bulls hanging off, and they might be a quarter mile from the group. They may be a mile or two from the group, but the mature bulls are going to be off somewhere where they have good forage, but they're going to be by themselves. This is a longer discussion, but in some populations here in Colorado, what we're finding is those mature bulls are actually getting hard-horned earlier, and they're actually making that move from their summer area to those cow-calf groups early. That happens. It stimulates those cows, and the breakup happens early, and sometimes we can see a whole-scale shift of cow-calf groups with a bull back out of their summer range a little early. Again, sometimes that has to do with the weather. So in that situation where your buddy was talking, it could have easily been a combination of the weather was different, the moisture was different, but also maybe we had a little bit better survivability of bulls from 1 year to the next, to where now he's a different age structure, to where he goes up and he picks up some cows a little early, and those cows are like, yeah, let's head out. And they went maybe down to their calving area, or they went over into this other little pocket where they could feel safe. And this year they just moved a little earlier than they did last year just because of weather and a little bit of a difference in age structure.
Wow. All right.
We got to take a short break. You're listening to Sportsman of Colorado. Again, my name is Scott Watley, along with my partner, Red Merrill. Chris Rowe is our guest, Rowe Hunting Resources. Check out his website, rowehuntingresources.com. Again, for a limited time here, Chris has been kind enough to give us 20% off his subscription. Just put in the promo code RADIO. We'll be right back.
If you're looking for a place you're always welcome, let me recommend Kiowa Creek Sporting Club. Hi, this is Scott Watley. Just 20 miles east of Denver, Kiowa Creek has it all. A professionally designed sporting clays course, archery range, and year-round dog training fields. Be sure and leave time to relax in the spacious clubhouse. For all Kiowa Creek Sporting Club has to offer, call 303-644-4627 or check out their website, kiowacreek.com. Mention Sportsman of Colorado, and with your one-year membership purchase, you'll receive 100 free sporting clays. Call 303-644-4627. That's 303-644-4627. Kiowa Creek Sporting Club is an official sponsor of Sportsman of Colorado.
In a flash, from out of nowhere, your whole life can change forever. It happened so quickly, nobody saw it coming. Soon, the medical bills will be arriving.
Will insurance cover your injuries? Does the other driver have assets? Should I sue?
It was his fault, after all. After an accident, you need to call the law offices of Flesh Law. Flesh Law will never settle until you are fully compensated for your injuries.
Call 303-806-8886 for the Flesh Law Firm. 303-806-8886. Online, go to fleshlawfirm.com.
Flesh Law, the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys.
At Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, we believe that all pets deserve to have a good life. And because we know that your pet will have many different needs throughout its life, we offer complete pet care services every day, all at one location. Whether your furry friend needs a checkup, advanced medical care, surgery, boarding, grooming, obedience training, food, care products, or toys, we are here for your pet 7 days a week. At Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, we know that you want the very best for your pet, which is why you can count on us to provide top-notch care in everything we do. We are certified with the highest rankings by the American Animal Hospital Association and hold a gold star rating with the Better Business Bureau. You and your pet can visit us Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., Saturday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. We are located at 8681 East Lincoln Avenue in Lone Tree. Learn more about us by visiting our website at lonetreevet.com or just give us a call at 303-708-8050.
Hi, this is Scott Watley for my friends at One Shot Gear in Englewood. If you are a hunter, you know that after a full year of training, shooting, and planning, when the season rolls around, you are lucky to get one shot at a trophy. At One Shot Gear, they've got you covered with the largest selection of premium hunting gear in Colorado, like Blosser rifles, Sitka gear, and Night Force optics. The One Shot Gear team has the experience, so they can help you find exactly what you need for the hunt of a lifetime. When only the best will do, choose One Shot Gear, located at 4720 South Santa Fe Circle in Englewood. One Shot Gear is your premium hunting gear headquarters. Call 303-284-3828. That's 303-284-3828. If Sitka makes it, One Shot Gear has it. They're the largest stocking dealer in Colorado. Ask for Grant. Tell him Sportsman of Colorado sent you. Mention Sportsman of Colorado and today only receive 10% off of all clothing and boots. One Shot Gear is an official sponsor of Sportsman of Colorado.
It's truck month again at Lindlau Chevrolet. We're the number one truck dealer in Colorado. Hi, I'm Dan Johnson. We're overstocked with trucks and giving discounts and rebates up to $10,000 off Silverados. Hurry, these offers won't last. LindlauChevrolet.com. Chevy, find new roads.
Rush to Reason with John Rush. Weekday afternoons at 3 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Sportsman of Colorado. If you're just turning on your radio, Chris Rowe is our guest, Rowe Hunting Resources. We've got a ton of questions, and we're going to have to do this again with Chris to get through a lot of these. But a couple of good ones we wanted to pick out here today, Red, and you had an excellent one on your list.
All right, Chris, and we really do appreciate you being here with us, Chris. Man, this is interesting to us, and I'm sure it's interesting to our listeners. It's a really good show. All right. Do you worry about bugling with other hunters when you're, let's say, the second season, when over the counter and there's tons of people out in the woods? All right. So do you worry about bugling with other hunters, and how do you circumnavigate calling in other hunters?
That goes back to me and my core philosophy of starting very low key to start and then building only if and when I need to. So if I want to locate an animal, yes, there's two different ways that I will do it. I can either bugle. Some people call it a locate bugle. Me, for what I teach, it's more of a contact bugle, but it doesn't matter. If you're going to use a bull to locate and get a response to try to figure out where they are, you're darn right. If you're in an area that has a lot of hunting pressure and there's a lot of people out in the field, you blow a bugle, and 10 minutes later, you could have somebody in your back pocket. So you got to be creative, and you got to be kind of a little bit cagey with it. Number one, make sure you're at least in the ballpark of where you think elk are going to be. You know, if you're just walking the top of a ridge, just out there bugle, you might not get as much of a response and success out of it as you think you have. And number two, you're going to definitely broadcast to other hunters. So that's where I'm going to – I don't usually bugle from the top of the ridges. I don't usually bugle from the bottom of the valleys. I will try to get on the same plane, same general area that the elk are probably going to be in. If I do a bugle, I'm going to do it low-key. I'm going to do it somewhat quiet, and I will use my feet to move myself across the landscape to cover more country rather than rip a real strong bugle out there to try to elicit a response. The other thing that you can do is use cow calls to get that response. Or, especially if we're talking about that rifle season, you're talking mid-October, get out at night. And I know this is difficult. I mean, it's cold. You like to be in your sleeping bag or in your warm camper or whatever. I'm telling you what, by that time, the bulls are, most elk are pressured. They know it's hunting season. They've been pushed around quite a bit. And it's not uncommon for a lot of the vocal activity and a lot of movement activity to happen after dark. So if you want to avoid other hunters, but you still want to be able to locate and know where animals are, stay out 2 hours after dark or get out in the field at least 2 hours before light. And I'm not talking about legal shooting light. I'm talking about before the little sliver of turquoise hits the horizon. Oftentimes, those animals will be leaving their feeding areas and moving towards their bedding areas that early. And it's at that time when they're making that move that they start to talk. No one else is out there in the field. They're all sleeping, okay? Or they're having their first morning cup of coffee. If you're a mile in on the top of that ridge, you can hear it. And you know which way they're going, you know where they're going, and if you want to give a bugle to give a response, a lot of times they will respond. Or a cow call, a lot of times they will respond. Now, you can follow them in the dark. You can be within a stone's throw of where they are when it does become legal shooting light, where 90% of everybody else is walking up the valley or just hitting the ridge, and they're struggling to figure out where they need to start. So be creative on when you get out there and put in a little extra effort. I will tell you, we all love elk season, and we wait all year for it. Don't be afraid to put in a little bit of extra effort. You can always take a nap during the day. Get up early. Get out there. Listen at night. Get yourself a little bit more of a strategic location. If you get tired during the day, take a nap during the day. But quite honestly, oftentimes you're going to be filling your tag within a couple of days, and then you can take the rest of your week off and relax.
And, you know, I think another thing, too, I know a lot of guys, they'll go out till 9:30, 10 o'clock, and go in at 10.
Yeah.
To me, that's a mistake, man. There's a lot of elk out there.
Well, and they're not going anywhere. That's exactly right. You know, some people – now, in those areas where you have bad wind currents, mm-hmm. and the wind is unpredictable, absolutely, just get out. Because you don't need to be screwing up, you know, the elk and tipping them off that you're there with your scent just blowing all over the place. However, here's another – I talk about all the time. If the elk are going into their beds early – especially when we're talking about late season. What does that mean? That means they've stopped eating early. It usually takes about 4 hours for an animal to go through their stomach contents, chewing their cud and just, you know, doing like an elk does or a cow does and just chewing their cud, going through their stomach contents. Well, the longer they're in their bedding area, staying quiet, trying to hide, the more hungry they get, the more restless they get, and they do. They start getting restless. Now, they're not going to get up in the middle of the day and go all the way back down the valley to get water or get food. But a lot of times, they're going to be bedding in those little thick pockets that give them food, water, cover, in a very tight little area to where they might get up and they might stretch their legs. They might only, you know, walk around a few yards, but they're going to get up and they're going to move. A lot of times, those bulls, that if they are still pegged down with those cows, they're going to get up. They're going to get restless. If you're there in the middle of the day, sometimes the midday, you know, from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock in the afternoon can be absolutely the most successful time you can get in there because they are restless, because no one else is in the field. And if you know where they went to bed and you know where they are on that ridge or that thick patch of timber, you put the wind in your face, you sneak in and get in close, you use a few strategic vocalizations, whether cow calls or bugles or whatever. Man, sometimes I know for me, that is my favorite time to call, is in those midday hours. But again, if the wind is consistent and allows you to do it.
Sure. Only got about 3 or 4 minutes for this, but you mentioned scouting. I don't know what percentage. A lot of guys just don't get that opportunity to go do that. Sure. They go out for their week and get out there the night before and then go out hunting. Are there any tips you got in scouting on what you're looking for, or maybe tips of, hey, don't do this while you're scouting, you know, because are there some mistakes you can make while you're scouting?
The number one that always comes up, and I do think it's a mistake, is people want to get out and practice their calling. And so they get out there in the summer and they want to start calling animals, or especially when we're talking late August or even rifle season, you know, during that week off, you know, archery's over, muzzleloader's over, but the rifle hunters are starting to get out there. Try to really refrain calling animals outside of your active hunting season, because again, those animals, if they are interested and want to come seek you out, the more times they respond and either get a nose full of people or don't find anything, the less likely when you get ready to hunt, they're going to respond, favorably to your calling. So I do not recommend people getting out there and calling during the off season. The other thing too is if you don't have a lot of time to get it, and different habitats, again, are going to lend themselves to different levels of scouting. For me, most of the time, just in general, if you cannot lay physical eyes on those animals, then what I try to focus on is what is the water in the forage? What are the water and forage doing in my area this year? Is it dry or is it an average or wet year? If it's dry, then I focus on the water sources because the elk are going to focus on those water sources. If it's overly wet and there's food and water everywhere, then I know, okay, my elk might be a lot more scattered than I'm used to where now I have to spend more time on the field, stay out all day or get out there at night or whatever. So I really pay attention to the forage and the amount of moisture that area has been getting. And then take notes. If you don't have the ability from year in and year out to get out there preseason to scout, then during your hunting season, take notes. Take notes of what happened in the summer. Just kind of keep an eye on your area that you hunt. Jot down some notes. Oh, it's raining. Oh, it's not raining. Oh, it's whatever. Just compare those notes year in and year out. It may take 4 or 5 years, but all of a sudden you start looking at a pattern, and you took the notes in summer, and then you compare them with your notes in fall, you'll see patterns emerge. Use that previous information to help predict what you need to do and where you need to be in your area come that season.
Man, I wish we had about 4 hours here, Red. I'll tell you, this is great.
Yeah, I might get educated enough where I could actually kill one when I go out.
Well, I tell you, be sure and go to Chris's website. If you've listened to 3 minutes of this or the full hour today, you know Chris knows his stuff. I'll just put it that way. So go to his website. I'm telling you, you know, we'll go out and we'll invest in the rifle or the archery equipment, and the clothing, all the different things. Maybe you pay your outfitter, you buy the new truck that gets you there, all the things. And Chris, what is normally the subscription? May I ask that?
We have two levels: a 3-month subscription, which is $25, and then a full year subscription, which is $50. And so, okay, by the time it's done, it's $20 or $40. Yes, so, it's less than a pack of broadheads. People, come on!
Right. So, seriously, do the final investment that you need to help make your hunt more successful. RowHuntingResources.com is the website. Again, put in the promo code RADIO, and you'll get 20% off of that subscription. And, Chris, we will do this again, my friend.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Red, thank you, sir.
You bet.
Thank you for joining us today for Sportsman of Colorado. Be sure and check out our site, sportsmancolorado.com. Hope everyone has a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.